next case is 99-1142, State of Ohio, Appeal OHIC Insurance Company versus the Ohio Insurance Guarantee Association.
Contribution or subrogation against the OIGA or against the high insurer. The statute prohibits us from doing so. Once the case goes into litigation, related, such as Mrs. Knapp, has lost forever her right to try and settle the case with the co-defendant for anything less than policy limits. And if the case goes in the case, there's a defense verdict for the co-defendant insurer, they've lost that money.
Well, what's happening in all these cases that have been settled? So, as you know, the respondent says a lot of there have been, 40% or, I don't know, a whole lot of cases settled. In fact, this case is settled. One of the parties.
Well,
what's been happening, I guess, and the tells, I mean, mandamus is an extraordinary writ. It shouldn't be used just to declare someone's rights. It's that historically it's been an extraordinary writ, and so that's why I'm really pushing you on this, because this seems to me like it is not an extraordinary writ case.
What has been happening in the case that's settled is that the OIG has been successful in forcing its position on the citizens of the state. That's what's happened.
You mean insurance people whose insurance policies have been suffering because of these settlements, or have insurance companies been suffering?
I would submit that claimants have been suffering,
okay.
Because claimants are clearly protected persons under the OIGA statute. This court recognized that in the Pine Mutual case, because the plaintiffs in each of these individual cases, when these cases go to trial, are suddenly faced with a dilemma. Either negotiate on traditional principles that affect negotiation, what are your exposures, what's the likelihood of getting a successful verdict, and take something less than policy limits, which is going to obviously benefit your client, or risk going to trial, or take something less than everything, and then face the OIGA, which is going to take a position it took in Vickers, was, hey, because you took less than the policy limits of the co-defendant, you've lost your right to make a claim against the fund. That's the predictor that the plaintiffs are putting in this case.
But OIGA is not governed by an insurance company in a pot negotiating. OIGA is meant purely as sort of a backup for those who have lost their insurance company. And the statute requires them to look to those who are subject to their consultants first. Because this fund would be totally exhausted if your condition prevailed. This fund would be quickly exhausted, and that would hurt all the claims left behind.
We are in addressing that specific issue. The statute, the purposes of the statute are set forth in 395503. And among the stated purposes are, number one, to avoid acceptance of delay in federal cases. Number two is to avoid financial loss to the high insurers and to the claimants. And another stated purpose of the statute is to avoid insolvencies and to create an association that is going to allow for to deal with an allocation on these insolvencies. I respectfully submit that the OIGA's position doesn't further any of these purposes. First of all, it doesn't foster early settlements of these cases, because it's putting plaintiffs in an untenable position. Is either I take something less than everything, which will benefit my client, or then I forfeit the right against go against the OIGA. So it's certainly not furthering the interests of the claimants in the case. Now, I would say it's not furthering the interests of the PI insurers in the case, because you may have situations where the PI insurer can get out of that case and get out of personal exposure if the OIGA would step up to the plate and offer up to its $300,000 statutory limit and get them out of the case and get them out of any potential exposure.
Could there be disagreement, though, on that subject, whether or not stepping up to the plate earlier, and this is all about forcing negotiation to settle? And the exhaustion policy that they've adopted doesn't play into that. If there is a legitimate disagreement about whether that benefits, whether that's within the agency's role, isn't mandamus inappropriate? Doesn't mandamus require us to look to clear legal duties? A clear legal duty. Now, I'm just wondering if that...
You're absolutely correct, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. It comes down to this. No one is going to argue, and the OIGA...
It may be preferred. Who could argue with that for your purposes?
Mr. Gardner acknowledges in his affidavit that the OIGA is a creature of statute, and he acknowledges that it only possesses those rights and duties expressed in its enabling statute. It's our position that if we look and give a realistic assessment of 395.13. When we look at that, if this court agrees that statute does not give the OIGA the statutory authority to force its position on exhaustions on the litigant, on the litigants in Ohio, in the state of Ohio, if that statute does not provide justification for the OIGA, then it has no right to assert that position. It can only act pursuant to the powers and duties given to it by the legislature.
But if for mandamus purposes, that statute nowhere says do not enforce an exhaustion kind of policy.
Well, if I may, the full counsel for UIGA is made an exhibit of the...
You may want to turn that a little bit more so that...
I can see it. We see it.
That's right.
He made a blow up of the sentence, but really the core... He's outlined in that the part of the statute he's going to direct this court's attention.
Yeah.
The statement on that exhibit is the first sentence of 3955.13a. This is what we're here about. Our position is, number one, the statute makes reference to covered claim. A covered claim is a statutorily defined term within the Act. It's statutorily defined to mean an unpaid claim which arises out of and is within the insurance coverage of the insolvent insurance policy. In our case, what does that mean? That means that has to be a claim that arises out of and is within the PI policy. It goes on to say, upon which recovery, well, upon which it's referring back to covered claim. There can be no question about that. It also goes on to say, which recovery is presently possible. It's our position that by virtue of the fact that this statute references covered claim, which again is a statutorily defined term, it means that the other insurance policy has to be a policy which provides coverage for the same claim covered by the policy, PI policy, so like the same risk. I would submit upon which recovery supplies support for that, relating back to the current covered claim. And I also submit that presently possible, in order for the OHIP policy to be deemed to be providing coverage for the PI doctor, there has to be a determination of joint and several liability. There is no determination at this point. What we're talking about is before judgment. All of these reasons, I would submit, lead to the only reasonable interpretation, and that is the exhaustion position has to be deemed to only apply to insurance coverage which applies to the same risk which is covered by the PI policy. More important, the Act itself, 3955.03, sets forth the governing purposes of the statute. 3955.04 held this court that the provisions of the OIG Act shall be liberally construed to afford the purposes set forth in 3955.04. Again, those purposes are avoid excessive delay in settlement, avoid financial loss to the claimants, such as Relator Neff, and PI insurance, and also provide for the association for a fair allocation among all the carriers. The OIGA's position in this case does not lead to a fair allocation of the ramifications of the default on the insurers of this state. OPIC, like all the other insurers in this state that want to write insurance policy, pays a percentage of its premium dollar to go into that fund.
What does the acronym OHIC stand for?
Ohio Insurance Company.
OHIC,
yes.
Ohio Insurance Company. So the Ohio Insurance Company, the Ohio Hospital Association, and the trial lawyers are all on the same side in this case.
That's absolutely right.
Oh, kind of makes interesting parties, doesn't it? Uh-huh.
And you'll see, here's a case...
You don't suppose the Hospital Association will say we're wrong if we grant the writ, will you?
You got
will me.
Exactly. In this case, you've got the Ohio Insurance Company and a plaintiff's counsel who's suing an insurer of the Ohio Insurance
I understand.
Company, both acting as relators in this case. Why? Because their interests are aligned. They both agree the exhaustion position is unfair. You've also got the Ohio Hospital Association...
But is the statute at all geared toward being fair to other insurers, or is it to individuals with claims who will not be compensated?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that to the degree that 3955.04 says that one of the stated purposes is to create an association for the allocation
to fund it, essentially.
Right.
That the position by the OIGA is really at adverse to that purpose, because here, okay, you paid 50% of the premium into it, but now it's being asked because it had the misfortune of being an insolvent insurance company involved with these high cases to pay up for the exposure of somebody who had never received the premium down before, who had never had the opportunity to consider underwriting
considerations. Arguably, that's the nature of the plan. And although it's unpalatable and unfair if you're one of the guys who ran your business right and here you are paying claims, you know, it sounds like the argument is this doesn't seem fair to other insurers. Is that, I mean, if it's not the goal.
It's certainly, I would assume that one of the stated goals is to provide an association for the allocation of risk. And to the extent that it's forcing OHS to bear a disproportionate share of that burden, that's against the stated purpose.
Can we show that, though? Can we show that? Isn't it really speculative? Because we have to have the argument go, well, in the normal settlement environment, we'd like to all be on, you know, equal footing, and we'd like to settle early, and don't you have to speculate about how settlement will play into this, because that's all it's about. Nobody's getting foreclosed from their rights to go to trial and get a judgment and collect from whomever's left. It's only about the real sort of hard to get your hands around concepts of how settlements can be better engaged in when you have the ability to pay less than your limits.
Your Honor, really, I'd say it's only certainly if it's going to act in the best interest of its insured, it's going to try and get its insured out of this case
for
as little money as possible and preserve those limits for its insured for other exposures. And OIGA is essentially preventing from doing what would be in the best interest of the insurer, which would get him out of the case and preserve the limits for him from other exposures. And to that extent, I would submit that it is against the underlying purposes of the statute, because it is a disproportionate allocation of risk among the insurers in the state.
You're good. Your time is finished.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Coles,
okay, please support. I'd like to briefly address at the beginning of this argument a few of the procedural and jurisdictional issues that were raised in questioning by the court to clarify a few matters and then move on to the substantive or merits issues. It is clearly the law of the state of Ohio in numerous decisions by this court, most recently the Lindell versus Davis decision, a unanimous decision of this court, that if what the realtor is in fact claiming for is an injunction and declaratory relief, that in that situation, that is not an appropriate grounds for mandamus. This court does not have jurisdiction to issue a writ in that situation. I would submit that that is precisely what we have here. This is a situation where, let's be frank about it, what OHIC is asking for is a declaratory judgment that the OIGA's position is incorrect. That's the long and the short of it. And in that situation, the appropriate remedy for OHIC is to go to a trial court and file a declaratory judgment action.
In every separate case?
They could file it in every separate case, or they could file it in one case. And had they filed it at the time that they could have, let me address this, because I think your question raises that issue. Had they filed this when the decision that they referred to was in fact settled, that decision came out approximately 3 weeks after the insolvency. This is not something that occurred a year and a half into it. They referred to our argument being disingenuous. I would suggest to you that a 3 or 4 week delay for the decision and then another month and a half on top of that for the filing of briefs before the case was settled is not serious.
But do you know why the case was settled in the middle of the fact that we were going to hear it and in effect taking a, I would think you settling the case would have taken the exact opposite position than you're taking now, because you say there has to be exhaustion before there is any kind of claim against your client, but settling that case before there was exhaustion is the contra argument, isn't it?
No,
not that that means anything with regard to mandamus. I understand your procedural argument. It's a good one.
The case, actually, there were negotiations on that case throughout. That was not something where there, that obviously this is not in the record, but there were negotiations throughout that proceeding. That
Do you know whether was there exhaustion in that case?
Pardon?
Do you know whether was there exhaustion in that case?
There was not exhaustion. There were three other policies.
But you settled it.
One of them, two of them actually settled for less than policy limits, and the court, therefore, says the Guarantee Association could not be liable. The court said something that we did disagree with. There were cross appeals to the Supreme Court. The court said that the doctor would be liable for any amount over $300,000 without having protection of his policy. And counsel retained by the Guarantee Association, who was in fact representing the doctor, cross appeal on that issue. So there was some exposure with the doctor, and in an effort to protect the doctor, there was consideration of settlement.
Did the Guarantee Association pay anything in the Vickers case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that different than the position you're taking here today?
In that particular case, Ron, we had a situation where we had a doctor that we had to look out for.
I understand.
His interest under that situation.
But it still involved the exhaustion issue.
It did, Ron. And we have said in papers that I filed, or that we have had an argument on this in front of Judge Watson, that there are some situations where the Guarantee Association looks at the risk, and that's the nature of litigation.
Sure.
If somebody takes a position, you don't take that position until you drop over dead with it. You have to be a little bit flexible at times, and in cases settle, and there's really nothing at all the matter with that, nothing at all inconsistent.
But you said whenever, because I'm interested in the procedural argument too, and you said that, no, they could do it all in one case. They really could. They'd have to file declaratory judgment action in one in Lucas County, and if the next case is in Summit County, they'd have to file separate declaratory judgment actions.
They,
the parties,
could have, they could have filed separately, but I guess...
Not could have. Wouldn't they have to?
Well, to get the maximum protection, they might want to file in multiple counties, but what they really needed to do was to file early, and after filing early, to get that case accelerated. Had they done so...
No, sir, I don't mean that case. I mean all the other ones that are out there.
Any of those cases could have been accelerated and brought to this court. We could be here today on one of those cases.
You cannot do in one declaratory judgment action all 200 or 2,000 cases that are out there, could you?
Well, the court would give guidance. It is correct that a decision in Summit County is not going to be binding on the trial judge in court.
I think
but that decision in Summit County would then be appealed and would be in front of this court today.
That's what you're
and that decision would be binding.
Is there any question that OIGA is a, what is OIGA? Is it a public agency? Is it a quasi-public agency?
OIGA is a nonprofit association of insurers. Every insurer doing business in the state of Ohio is required by statute to be a member of that association.
And you think that, you have no question that mandamus can be applied against that association?
I think that in this, you can posit a situation where mandamus might be appropriate, but in this particular situation, there's just no question that mandamus is not appropriate.
My issue is I thought the law was mandamus was to be applied against a public entity that has some legal duty to do something but does not. Are there exceptions?
No, that is correct, Your Honor.
OIGA is not
a branch of the state.
You didn't argue that. That's why I wondered. That's the only reason.
That is absolutely correct. OIGA is not a branch of the state government.
On the acceleration issue, since the initial calamity, yes, OIGA has been trying to accelerate a resolution of all these cases.
No, OIGA,
I thought that was a complaint that we were hearing that OIGA was dragging all of this out, including the stay and all of those things. It has been OIGA's posture to get to an early resolution and early defendant transfer to this court on any matter.
You're asking two questions. First of all, this is the mode of settlement. And settlements are proceeding as they would in any situation, at an appropriate pace. They're proceeding fairly brisk. They're proceeding perhaps a little bit brisker than they did when Pye was solved, when Pye had its reputation for litigating a lot of cases. As to the posture of the OIGA with regard to declaratory judgment actions, there have been declaratory judgment actions filed against the Guarantee Association on other issues by other insurers. And we are proceeding with those as quickly as possible. And
what was OIGA's posture with respect to the stay in Judge Watson's court?
The OIGA opposed the stay in Judge Watson's court, as it opposed the stay this court had to intervene, or a plaintiff's attorney who intervened, and also thought that in this particular case it was not necessary. Let me be clear, we were not saying it might not be appropriate in an individual case. We were simply saying that an across-the-board stay of every case was probably not a wise idea, and that particular plaintiff's attorney agreed with us, and this court apparently did too, and granted that exception. Well, the stay only, it's argued it only restricted trials, Your Honor. I believe that the party would be in the cell. Correct. I'd like to address the merits, and I'd like to be clear on one point. The issue before the court today with regard to the merits is not whether these five claims are going to be paid. That's not the issue. The issue is who's going to pay them, the solvent insurance company or the nonprofit OIGA. That's the issue this court has to decide if it gets over the jurisdictional hurdle and reaches the merits. And the answer to that issue is presented in this board. The answer is in the statute, the very statute that creates the liability of the Guarantee Association and the statute that limits the liability of the Guarantee Association. That statute, that provision, 3955.13, says three things. It says, first of all, is there a covered claim? A covered claim is a claim that someone has against an insolvent insurer that was doing business in the state of Ohio. Because if you don't have a covered claim, that's a threshold issue. That's the gatekeeper, so to speak. If you don't have a covered claim, you don't even get in the door to the Guarantee Association. So that's the first point. The second point is, does that person who has a covered claim, can he or she recover from another insurance company? And that's the language that's out there highlighted in red.
Yes, sir. Pursue that. Does that mean this posture of OIGA that, for example, somebody who was injured in a hospital setting has to pursue extensions of the application of the principles of Clark versus Southview Hospital and seek even perhaps broadening of that doctrine to lay off the responsibility for a negligent act that the physician covered under PIE onto the hospital.
In most of these situations, and virtually all of these situations, if it's a Clark v. Southview situation, the plaintiff's attorney will sue both the doctor and the hospital.
Yeah, I'm asking if it isn't quite there, and it requires an extension of that. In other words, the doc, maybe there was a promotion in advertising of the emergency room services, and something that happened upstairs, not in the emergency room. The doc has
the Guarantee Association, this is, if I may say, this is another reason why mandamus is totally inappropriate here, because there are sometimes judgment calls that have to be made. That's the nature of the law business. And the Guarantee Association sometimes has situations where they look at it, and they may have two defendants, perhaps two doctors, for example, or they make a conscious decision that it's possible that the second non-PI doctor might be liable, but it's such a long chance. It's so unlikely that it would be inappropriate to demand that that individual exhaust his insurance. So these are sometimes judgment calls that have to be made, which is precisely why an across-the-board mandamus saying that your position is wrong, it is simply not appropriate. It has to be looked at on a case-specific basis, and that's precisely why an individual case would present this issue much better to the court than this preemptive mandamus original action. Yes, Your Honor.
The concrete example
of how it would work. Sure. If a person goes into the hospital and there were two doctors who failed to diagnose a cancerous condition in that individual, and one doctor was had been insured by PI, and the other doctor had been insured by, say, St. Paul, then in that particular situation, the insurance of the St. Paul doctor has to be exhausted before the OIGA has any obligation. The rationale behind that is that since the fund is a source of last resort, its purpose has been alluded to is not to benefit insurance companies. Its purpose is to protect the people who have no other source, Not whatsoever. That, in that situation I just gave you, the plaintiff who is suing would have another source. They don't need the Guarantee Association because they can recover for their injuries from St. Paul, who has a large policy.
What if the duck...
The person who has a claim, if they exhaust their claim, they can come back against the Guarantee Association and attempt to seek the balance. Now, whether or not they are entitled to the balance will also impinge another provision of the Act that has to deal with the credits the Guarantee Association gets for payments made by other insurance companies. So it's going to depend on a case-by-case basis whether they will actually be able to collect.
If the St. Paul, if the St. Paul doctor refuses, their insurance company refuses to settle because they feel from the evidence that they have that the other doctor was completely at fault and their doctor was completely not at fault. Do you then force the plaintiff to sue the St. Paul doctor to a jury verdict before you discuss settlement?
Your Honor, are you causing a situation where the St. Paul doctor personally is refusing to go on with settlement?
Yes, and you have forced them, the plaintiff then, to sue the doctor to a jury trial and go through all the expense of suing the one doctor who doesn't want to settle. Now, do you do that?
One doctor, on my answer is twofold. One doctor should not be allowed to hold hostage the entire Guarantee Association, the Ohio Revised Code, and what is just and appropriate. The second answer is that the hypothetical that you posited is not a situation that has occurred during the high insolvency. It's simply not a situation that we've had to deal with. It hasn't happened.
One,
I think it absolutely controls, Your Honor. This case absolutely goes contrary to the spirit of the Pye decision. In that case, this court held that all other insurance had to be exhausted in very broad language about that. And while the relators have pointed at the fact of some of the events, those distinctions have no significance. In that case, and may I point out, not only in that case, but in every case that is interpreted this statute, there are two Court of Appeals decisions interpreting the statute in the context of joint tort fees, which is the exact situation we have here. There are a variety of other situations, and in Pye and in every other case interpreting the statute, the courts have found that the other insurance, whatever it might be, has to be exhausted. I think that you're absolutely right that what they are attempting to do here is to do through the back door what they cannot do through the front door. This is essentially subrogation in advance. And the Pye decision and the statute makes it clear that OIG does not exist for the benefit of insurance companies. We don't exist so that we can provide money so that they have to pay less. We exist for the fellow who has the claim, and there is no other claim. There is no other source. If we are forced to pay our money for the benefit of solvent insurance companies, we are forced to lose this defense and go out and pay where solvent insurance companies should be stepping to the plate. We will run out of money, and that fellow who comes to us and says, I have a claim, and I have no other insurance that I can get it from. You are my only source. You are my last resort. We're going to have to tell that person, sorry, there's no more money. Or sorry, you're going to have to wait. And why are we going to have to tell them that? So that OIG can keep the money in his pockets. That is not the purpose of this act.
Thank you, Mr. Foley.
Thank you.
Mr. Mash, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
If they ever pay anything.
Yes, Your Honor. Just a quick rebuttal to the point you made before. Number one, Pye Mutual involved the contribution situation. This is not a contribution situation. The Pye Mutual case did not address the position taken by OIG here. More importantly, the point raised by Mr. Foley about this prophecy of boom and doom if they run out of fund, the legislature foresaw this possibility. In the statute itself, the legislature says if you run out of money, what you do is pay on a pro rata basis until the following year when you pay it. It's not as if the legislature did not foresee that this possibility may occur. This was obviously something that the legislature did and put in the statute to address. For all the foregoing reasons, we respectfully submit that this court interpret the statute in a manner further the legislative purposes to protect claims by people and
Submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn the court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. So the session of the Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.